Accession number 177747, reel 6.
And certainly, sometimes one hears NCOs saying, you know, you're on report, and on being asked why, replying, because it's your turn.
Yes, I like that. I noticed that I said to you that I thought that this training at pre-opt was in stints of a fortnight on particular disciplines. I've noted that I had to do just the fortnights on gun drill and weapon training, not having to do the fortnights on sort of basic army training and on driving, which I think were the other two.
Presumably, you didn't have to do the driving because you passed the test on the first day.
That's right.
Proved competence.
Exactly.
It does seem that this pre-opture was organised on a rather flexible, modular basis.
Yes. Yes. Flexible up to a point, but of course these fortnights were quite rigid and categorical in their separation from each other.
Presumably they had to be kept as set packages to make the thing work.
Yes. Yes, it made sense.
Who was doing the actual instructing?
Oh, the usual array of experienced sergeants, some of whom had been on specialist gunnery courses. I can't remember now the title given to the top NCOs, warrant officers who had been on gunnery courses, but they were the kind of people you looked up to because they did know their stuff. And one never understood really why these people were other ranks and not commissioned. It's something I never understood throughout my war service, as with the pilot officers and sergeant pilots in the Air Force. However, that's a digression. We had, of course, a considerable staff of lieutenants. That's the basic officer in charge of training.
Organized in platoons or squads?
Yes, we were organized in platoons and squads. I think it had to be so because the numbers would be too great. Don't ask me what the numbers were. I can't remember, but there were a lot of people at this place. And I imagine that there was, at any time, at least one squad going through gun drill, one through weapons training, one through each of the other two disciplines. So that would make, I can't work it out, but that would be 80 people in one sequence, and there were probably, say, three or four lots of this happening at the same time. So there were a lot of people. This was a time, I would guess, though I don't know the stats, of pretty heavy recruitment and enlargement of the forces to face what was then known to be coming within, 18 months, Second Front and all that. Just ordinary things like having a boil, which I had to get burst and dressed, and mentions of mud after the rain in this forest we were in, and I've put a foolish captain tries to take us for maths. This must have reflected some perceived incompetence on his part. I put the hut very noisy.
Was this internal noise or external?
Oh, internal is the noise of the of the people living in it. Boisterous young men. I put, interestingly, that we had no access at this stage, after a week there, no access to newspapers, which I found very trying. I mean, it wasn't a deliberate policy. It was simply the fact that we were remote. And nobody had thought, I think, to put newspapers on sale in the Naffy.
So you were cut off from the real world?
We were cut off totally from any reality, yes. Yes.
Did you at the time feel that this pre-opture training was much more demanding than anything you'd done before?
I don't really think so, no. It was more concentrated, that would be. You felt under observation, that was the main difference. You were being tested. For me, it was a month's exam, really. as indeed Doc Two later turned out to be, and there hadn't been quite that intense observation during the period in the ranks, although I had had it during the previous 3 months, the last 3 months I spent at Worley. We were in a group known as the Potential Officers Group, and obviously we expected to be, and we were observed more than other people were.
And at the end of the pre-octu, was there any sort of ceremonial passing out?
Or not at the pre-octu, no. No, it was no.
Simply
it was very utilitarian. I noticed, talking of numbers, that I noted on the Friday the 25th of September, when I was still at this place, that a university intake of 250 arrives. So a lot of people were being processed. And all of these people were straight from university. I regarded them as lucky dogs for having got their certificate B and missed a year in the ranks, as well as having, in the case of the older universities, being able to take war degrees, which were unknown in the world I lived in, of provincial universities. In fact, one sensed, rightly or wrongly, privilege at work and resented it.
Well, an army is a hierarchical organisation.
Yes, but this was civilian hierarchy in operation as well.
So there's no final parade. Was there any system of final examination or test, or was this simply as you went along?
May I just check what I'm saying here? This, when I said that 250 arrived from university, I've added that I'm transferred now to B1. For weapon training.
Yes.
And the next day, Saturday the 26th, my last morning in A6. A6 presumably was the gun drill. Now we're... yes, I think that's right. Then transferred, starting on the Saturday, technically, for the next 2 weeks to weapon training. But there was a day off. Meanwhile, in Saturday, I went to Rochester and looked at Rochester Cathedral and enjoyed the outlook over the Medway. Sunday was also a free day. Walked alone in the woods and did a bit of thinking and writing and actually got lost. Barrack room was so noisy that I went to a new restroom and found it excellent for reading some English essays I was wading through at the time. Now, Monday the 28th, presumably, was the beginning of my second fortnight here in B1 troop for weapon training. I put dreadful NCOs in a miserable rainy day. Shiver beside the stove and get to bed early. I'm just trying to work out in my mind what the first fortnight was on. I did say I was in for two fortnights, I think. Yes, gun drill, that's right. The first fortnight had been gun drill, and this was weapon training, which meant including guns.
Was it just field guns, 25 well, pounders?
Well, if we had 25 pounders, it was. I rather suspect we may still have been on 18 pounders and 13 pounders. The 25 pounders were needed for the regiments in action. Not that, I mean, the only action at this time, of course, was in North Africa, but there were units getting ready for action. We may have had one or two 25 pounders just to show us the real thing. I think we did, in fact. This weapon training, I see, included small arms, talk about cleaning, rifle, and so on.
Was there any live firing?
I think there was. Yes, that's right. The following Tuesday, a battle course. Tough but thrilling all morning with live ammunition.
This is small arms ammunition.
This is small arms. It would be Bren and rifles.
Firing on fixed lines.
I guess, yes. Mm. Yes.
What I meant by live firing was actual live firing of the artillery pieces.
Oh, I see. No, there's none of that. There's no way we could fire artillery pieces.
You were just shoveling practice rounds through the breach.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I had done the live firing already at North Wales and so on, but not at this place, no. That we were on Wednesday the 7th, we were on ranges all morning, firing rifle and the boys' anti-tank rifle, which I think was it a sort of 2-pound little projectile?
It was 0.55 inch.
Uh-huh. It had an enormous recoil, I remember that.
It had a reputation for dislocating shoulders.
That's right. I put a fearsome thing with terrific blast recoil.
But it was quite effective as a defensive weapon against motorcycles and cavalry and light armour.
Not much use against the Tiger tank, but...
None whatsoever. And then not much was.
No. You can tell me that. Yes, that's right. PM, double gun drill, PT, no news of postings by this time. You see, I was 3 weeks through my 4 weeks of training, and what mattered was where next.
Had you not been told that if this went well, you'd be off to Walton Towers?
No.
You hadn't?
No. There were two parallel field gunner octus. One was Alton Towers and the other was the dreaded Catterick, which had a reputation for being a harsh and bleak place. Alton Towers was regarded as the softer option in the popular mythology. I've noted a lot of lecturettes we had to give to each other. We had to go for the umpteenth time to the mechanism of the Bren gun, which I'd been doing seemingly for years. And then we did go to ranges on Thames Bank, Gravesend, but this was not for firing the field guns, it was small arms. I think I said I felt pleased that I came top with 87 out of 110. And on Saturday the 10th, just a second, I'll close the door. Oh. Yes, I mentioned having been going on the ranges.
Doing particularly well with your scores, presumably with rifle and brand.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I wasn't quite a marksman, but I had a reasonable eye. And I've put still no posting news. I was obviously short of money because I note that I received 30 shillings from my parents for train fare. This presumably was to make sure that I had enough to get home to see them. So the next day, Saturday the 10th of September, we at last get our results. 36 of us are going to number 121 Octu at Alton Towers. The others have to wait to do more training. So this is good news. Going to Rochester, see Charlie Chaplin's Gold Rush, have a look inside the cathedral, and so on.
Presumably, the decision as to whether you would go on or not was made by the instructors in each of the modules as you went through them.
Yes, we either passed or failed. Yes.
You learned that at the end of each particular...
Well, I knew that I had got through the first fortnight, otherwise I would not have gone on to the second fortnight.
Did many men get held back?
Well, I don't know. I wish I knew statistically. What I did know is that there was the occasional miserable interview and miserable face and departure. People actually did go back. I would have thought not in large numbers, but a not insignificant percentage. Perhaps 1 in 10 or 1 in 8, something like that.
So the whole business was not just training, it was also assessment at the same time.
It was very much so, yes. Yes, that's right. it wasn't really training so much. Well, yes, it was. It was brushing up. It was testing, brushing up and testing, and making assessment of potential. I mean, let's consider that I don't know whether it was, say, 50% were coming direct from university without having been in the ranks, but supposing it were, then these people were untested in the real army. They had demonstrated what they could do in the cadet corps or whatever, training corps, but they had not really been in numbers up against the army itself, and this was really the first realism. I know that's an exaggeration, because I know that the senior training corps was as realistic as it could be, but it was nonetheless in an academic setting. This was really living rough and facing some realities which you don't in university training.
You were explaining about your arrival at the Octo's Autumn Palace.
Yes, I'm not sure we had quite got there. I went on Thursday the 15th of October via Uttoxeter to Alton Towers, which I consider to be a marvellous place, not because it was already pre-war some sort of amusement place, but because of the total contrast with anything that I had seen military, unlike cotton mills, unlike huts, Nissen huts in the woods. It was an old castellated style building, built I think by the 13th Earl of Shrewsbury, who incorporated into it at least one example of every known style of European architecture. However, it was superb because of its unmilitary appearance, and I realised at once why people preferred to go here rather than to go to the military buildings at Catterick. I've said in my diary, lovely quarters and facilities, even have wardrobes.
Well, would that be rather than lockers?
Yes, it was old furniture. It had human touches which you would not expect to find in military establishments. If I remember rightly, we only had about four people to a room, so they were not barrack-style rooms, they were large bedrooms. And each room was named. And you knew the quarters of the entire premise, vast old mansion, by names again, like the Leicester Tower and the something else Tower and so on. It was very homely. It was rather like going in one's early 20s. Well, no, I was only... What age was I? 19 at this time. No, I was 20. Going to... just a minute. No, I was over 42. I'm trying to remember what age I was. Yes, I was 20. It's rather like going a few years younger to one's idea from buying the boys' journals of that age of what it was like to go to the sort of school that Tom Wharton and co. went to, Bob Cherry and Tom Merry. This was an old, ghostly, haunted-style building of great charm. Anyway, there it is. We settled in. And everybody there seemed to be civilised. We had a rather snotty squad officer, but an excellent battery commander, major, and we were told quite a bit about the building itself. And there was even a library, which was in a library. The whole place reeked of civilian life rather than military life.
You said earlier on that you'd been going through some English essays, so were you keeping up your studies or were you just reading for pleasure?
I did quite a lot of something which would fall in between. I mean, reading for pleasure, but tolerably serious reading. I remember trying to teach myself economics. I remember taking into the army with me Sabine's History of Political Theory, in a sense to keep up with history studies, in a sense to provide an insulation between myself and the total Philistinism, which would was all too readily there. I wanted to keep touch with student life, in a sense, pending the end of the war.
Were there many others who were doing the same kind of thing as you were, trying to keep their minds alive by reading in a serious manner?
Statistically, I suppose there were very few, but I did know some, yes. Not many.
Did the military authorities have a view of this sort of behaviour?
Yes, I sensed from the way you put that that there could be a vein of cynicism running through what military authorities might think of this. But one of the points, I think, is that the military authorities in those days were themselves very diluted by territorials and people who themselves had been in or close to academic life. I mean, as one will find out later, I had various dons as fellow officers, and even one of the members of my gunner squad when we were recruited was a lecturer at Manchester University in French. So we're talking about something which I think would not be normal in peacetime military life.
So the army was already a hybrid?
Oh, very much so, very much so. Indeed, when I eventually joined a unit in Italy, it was a pre-war territorial unit and was had in it more senior officers who had been accountants or stockbrokers than who'd been soldiers.
You said that the squad officer was snotty. What was wrong with him?
I can't remember him at all. What I imagine is that he didn't seem to present a human face. I don't know what I meant, but I can visualise it. I mean, some people, one regarded as human beings, others as less so.
Do you remember anything about the other men who were sharing your room?
Yes, I do. I can't remember their names, but one of them was a member of a family which owned the very considerable railway truck production industry in or near Chesterfield. I think it may be not far removed from the industrially from the people who've just made about £80 million from selling it on to rail track, not rail track, to the people who bought the stagecoach, that's right. That's one chap. Yes, his name was Wicks, Tom Wicks, nice man. And there was a lad from Portsmouth Grammar School who hadn't, I think, started higher education or who'd gone into an office. And somebody else, who I can't remember. Yes, the other one was a student at Leeds University, reading history, I think. So that was not untypical as a cross-section of the people in our squad of about, I would think, 24 people. I ought to say that in that 24 people were probably three, but certainly two, ex-regular soldiers, one of whom eventually came, I think, top of the final exams for our squad, and who had started as a sort of boy bugler or drummer at the age of 15, and I regarded as the supreme example of a dedicated self-education I ever came across. I mean, he had had poor beginnings. I don't mean poor home, but in terms of academic life, I can't imagine a worse start than being a drummer boy in a regiment. But he had taken advantage of every opportunity of self-education and unbelievably had worked his way through to a commission. And another one was what you might call almost an old sweat, but a a brilliantly competent sergeant who had become a sergeant in the gunners or bombardier already before the war broke out, and then had been a good solid sergeant material, and who came to Octu and I think was commissioned eventually as a full lieutenant or very rapidly, having been a senior NCO. But there again, I mean, absolutely faultless chap in terms of character, outlook and everything else. These were admirable people, and I thought the very best representatives of the pre-war army one could have dreamt of. One, as a slightly cynical student, one didn't regard the pre-war regular army as having such people in it, but I found that it had. Sorry, that's a digression. We were given a full syllabus for what would be a 21 weeks course, and we settled in. We got the usual ritual tickings off for being slightly late for this or late for that. We were issued with an enormous quantity of pamphlets, and I got through the post the first of a postal course in economics, which I decided to treat myself to.
Do you remember what was on the syllabus?
No, I don't. It'll come out in talking about what we did. But I think, rather like the pre-Octu, there was a structured period on this, period on that, and so on.
Phases,
yes.
As far as I remember, this is the first occasion on which you actually knew what you were going to be doing before doing it.
It's not strictly true, because when I was called up as a signalman to the place at Bamber Bridge, we knew that there would be 6 weeks on general soldiering, 6 weeks on driving and motorcycling and so on. So this was really the second time. The messy period was in between, when I was an odd man out being getting extra training in this or that. That's when it was a mess. The initial training was structured, and the Octu training was structured.
So how did you...
We started off straight, jumped in at the deep end with stiff gun drill. I've put in numerous lectures, marching drill, CO's inspection. The social surprise was to be called Sir by all the NCOs, which we found rather embarrassing.
Apart from calling you Sir, were they otherwise respectful?
No. Only technically. Five minutes extra PE, sir, and so on. I mean, they were not afraid of disciplining us whilst calling us sir.
There's nothing quite so insulting as formal politesse.
That's right. Indeed, I remember the one of the... I wish I could remember the title they were given, the sergeant majors who were gunnery specialists, but I remember my only physical punishment, I think, in my life was being made to run round the gun square with a 25-pound shell under each arm, which is absolute hell for doing something wrong on the gun. I can't remember what. We had, of course, also quasi-civilian duties of fire-watching for our own premises. I noted in my first week that I spent a night on the Leicester Tower. This was fire-watching. And then straight back to PT at 7 o'clock in the morning and more gun drill. Then we had a three-hour battle drill in the afternoon. I've quite forgotten what this can have been. We couldn't have gone very far in 3 hours, certainly not far enough to fire any guns. And so it went on. We had rain and PE. Oh, inoculations. Why was that? I can't remember. But I've Sunday 25th of October, arm painful from inoculation. No doubt they were beginning to prepare us for possible postings overseas. An assault course on the 26th of October, afternoon on a dreadful house-clearing infantry scheme. This would be no doubt hand-to-hand stuff going through urban fighting.
Battle drills, of course, could have been infantry.
They probably were, but I've forgotten what they consisted of.
Because, after all, this is not only artillery training, this is officer training.
This is officer training, yes, it's quite true.
Infantry training is often used as a vehicle.
That's right. But I still can't remember what a battle drill would consist of, even in the infantry context.
Probably
I've quite forgotten.
Platoon attacks.
Yes, yes.
Something of that sort.
Yes, sort of little bits of trench warfare.
Mm.
Yes, yes. This was all interspersed with the technical stuff, mourning on directors, etc. This is the gun setting and the orientation in terms of map reading.
Was the technical stuff theoretical and scientific, or was it all strictly practical?
It was a combination. I remember filling notebooks up with theoretical stuff, but the payoff really was whether you could work the directors to locate yourself and the guns properly. And we had quite a lot of fascinating stuff with huge model layouts of territory and buildings and the ability to fire theoretical guns from in front of the glass case at various targets on the scenery as depicted, and puffs of smoke would come up where your shell had landed. This was all highly bogus. It was rather like amateur magicians. I think there was a chap under there with a grid crawling about, puffing up smoke. But it was a good game.
I mean, when you were doing